This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode number 57. It's a good one.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this podcast is where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm. And that can mean anything from canning, preserving, pickling, other artisan food skills, small space food growing, and even just taking small steps towards living a more sustainable lifestyle. All the different ways that we can live closer to our food, even if we have no garden space at all. If you want to learn about any of these topics or my online Canning Academy course, then just go to livinghomegrown.com. Okay, so this week's podcast is a really special one. It's a twofer. I am interviewing two people at once, and we had so much preserving information to cover that I broke this one up as a two-parter. I interviewed Joel McCharles and Dana Harrison of the Well Preserved website, who are also the authors of a brand new preserving book called Batch. Now, I'll get to the book in a minute, but first let me make sure that you know who Joel and Dana are. You may be familiar with their website, Well Preserved, and not even realize it. Now, first of all, they are super nice people who are so giving of their preserving information, and that's why I know you're going to love this episode. They started their blog, Well Preserved, back in 2008, and that is also when I started my blog, Living Homegrown, and we have known of each other and followed each other all these years and had never really connected. We'd never spoken on the phone. We'd never really been pen pals. We just knew and loved each other. And so it was really cool to do this interview because our audiences and our approach to preserving is really very, very similar. Now, their website has over 1,800 articles on it and 700 recipes, all developed by Joel. He is really, really good at being creative and thinking outside the box when it comes to flavor. So I will have a link in the show notes, not only for their book that we're going to talk about, but also to their website. And whenever you're looking for the show notes for a particular episode, it is always just the episode number. So in this case, you would go to livinghomegrown.com/57, and everything will be right there for you, everything that we talk about and links to everything that is mentioned in the show. So Joel is a home cook and a writer with a special focus on preserving food, and you can find his writing all over the internet and in print, and he is also a former TEDx Toronto speaker. He just loves to teach and make preserving food really accessible to everybody. Now, Dana is Joel's wingman in the kitchen, and she not only helps him prep and test and taste everything that he creates, but she is also a professional graphic designer and illustrator for the last 20 years, which makes her really the creative director of everything that they do. And so her job has always been to make sure that everything looks as good as it tastes. So together, they are an incredible combination. They create fantastic food that is as beautiful and enticing as it is delicious. Now, Joel and Dana live in Toronto, Canada, and I asked them to come on the podcast to talk about their new book, Batch. But as we started working out what to cover before we even recorded the podcast, I decided that we really had to do this in two parts so that we could focus on some incredible preserving tips and lessons, and so that you as a listener could walk away with some really simple ways for you to do and start preserving immediately, but also so that you could learn some of the behind the scenes of what it takes really to put together a book on preserving. So in today's episode, which is part one, we focus on lemon preserves, and Joel gives you three different ways that you can preserve lemons really easily and deliciously. And we also dive into the book and how they put it together and where they got their inspiration for the flavors so that you understand what it takes to put together a book like this. It's really interesting. Now, next week's podcast, which is part two, is all about salt and smoke curing of food. And you'll want to listen to that one too, because it's excellent. So back to their book. It's called Batch, and its subtitle is Tips and Techniques for a Well-Preserved Kitchen. It showcases seven different preserving techniques, from water bath and pressure canning to dehydrating and salting and smoking and more. But what I love about the book is that it is also broken up into not only the techniques, but also the different foods that you would preserve. So in other words, you go to a particular section, like let's say peaches, and it gives you all the different techniques that you'd already learned about earlier in the book. It gives you all the different techniques for what to do with peaches, not just water bath canning and making jam. It really covers a lot of territory. And we talk all about that in the interview. And so with that, why don't we just dive right into the interview? I think you're really going to enjoy it. So this is my interview with Joel McCharles and Dana Harrison of Well Preserved and the authors of the preserving book called Batch. Hey, Joel and Dana, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thrilled to be here.
Great. Well, it's been a long time coming that we finally got to officially meet. I'm making quotation marks in the air, but meet because we've known each other for quite a while. And I've been a huge fan of yours and a huge fan of your website, Well Preserved. And I have been waiting with bated breath for this book to come out. I had pre-ordered it, so I got it like the day that it was published, that it came out live. I got my little copy and sat down and practically read it cover to cover. I just love it. And I love what you did. So thank you very, very much for coming on the show.
Oh, wow. Thank you. That's great.
It means so much. Yeah we're giant fans of what you do. And it's been way too long.
Yeah. I know. Now, thanks to technology, it's so much easier. There's no reason that we shouldn't have ever spoken before, but I'm thrilled we can do this now. So I would love it if starting out, and I don't care which one of you want to give the story first, but could you tell listeners exactly how you got into preserving?
I'll let Joel take that one. He's got the best stories for that.
What really got me into preserving was probably love, as cheesy as that is. Dana and I moved in together, and my parents had always eaten their tomato sauce all the way through the winter. And I knew that they would give me a case of tomato sauce, but if I was actually going to get enough tomato sauce to keep eating spaghetti through the winter, which is a love of mine, that I was going to have to learn how to make it. So Dana and I learned how to make strawberry jam with my parents.
That is so cool. So you did learn from your parents, but you were an adult.
Yeah, I was about 30 by the time I really got back into it, I guess.
Yeah, they used to enlist him to help out when he was a kid, but he never, like, you know, when you're a kid and your parents make you do something, he didn't really want to help out. But when I came along, we started to go back to his parents' place and spend a day with them. And it was actually a great way for me to get to know his parents, too. I'd sit for hours with his mom cutting tomatoes in half and cleaning them up and putting them into the machine, and we'd spend the whole day together just having a beer and making tomato sauce.
That's a beautiful story. I love that. Well, and then you guys also started Well Preserved, the website. So tell me, how did that get started?
That one actually is a lot of me. we have the family over to our place for Christmas every year. Joel's an only child and I just have the one brother, so we didn't want to do the back and forth between families. We threw them right together right from the get-go. And he was cooking for hours and all through the holidays, and when everybody left, I let him sleep for like a day or as long as he wanted to anyway. And I was hanging around on the internet, and I sort of had been watching a lot of blogs for a while, and I hadn't thought about them in context of anything we did, but I'd always been pushing him to record his recipes because he'd make something really delicious and then not be able to make it again because he sort of goes freeform and never remembered what he put in something. So when I asked him to remake a dish, he was like, oh, I can't remember what I put in it. So I'd given him notebooks and all kinds of things, but he's more of a technology guy. So I'm like, he woke up and I said, hey, guess what? I started a blog. But I, as usual, had no idea. I usually don't have an idea of where his brain goes after that. I usually point him in a direction and he he just goes.
So I secretly made a promise to myself that day, and I didn't even know there was such a thing as a food blog, but I wanted to see if I could post 100 days in a row and of original content, and that ended up becoming 1,500 consecutive days of posting.
Wow. Wow. Well, I know, because I love the site, that's why it's so packed with so many fantastic recipes. And you guys even reorganized it just before you started the book, and I was just shocked at how many fantastic recipes that I didn't realize. So you went 1,500?
1,500 and some odd days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, yeah, some of the earlier ones, like we've been cycling back a lot, because you can write about strawberry jam a few times. And now that we really, after the whole experience of writing the book, we're working slowly to tighten up some recipes and go back and revisit some that we did in the past. And it's just been a really great learning experience for the both of us, from learning how to cook to learning about online and social and all of that stuff.
Well, part of the reason why it's such a shock that we've never really met in person before is because we both approach preserving, you as a group and me, we both approach it as a flavor being so paramount. It's not just about putting the food up, but it's about capturing that incredible flavor and then putting our own twist on it. And Joel, you're a real master at really taking something and putting your own twist on it. I just love the way you develop some of your recipes, and that's why I was so excited about this book. So let's dive into the book a little bit, because I would love for you guys to explain how the whole book came about. What was your goal in writing it?
Great questions and great answers. Yeah. Dana, I'll let you answer the goal part, and I'll start with the first part with how it came.
Yeah, that's my part. We had three goals. I'll let Joel explain how it came about. But when we decided to do it, our three goals were to not go broke, not break up, and not lose any of our friends. So we're already a success in my book. So I'm a happy camper, and it's better than I imagined it would be. So,
So how it started, about 3 years ago, we sat down and kind of took inventory. Would we keep doing well preserved? It takes a lot of time out of our lives and actually cost quite a bit to upkeep. So we decided that if we were, then we should take a step back and figure out how to make an economic model out of it. And the first thing that we decided was that no matter what, we were not going to do a book for a minimum of 2 years. 10 days after deciding not to do a book, we got a call from Random House, and specifically from Appetite, which was kind of our dream label. And we met the publisher with the best pitch ever, because we were so no pressure, because we didn't want to write a book. And we fell in love with him and knew in our first meeting that this is what we were going to end up doing.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, I remember when you guys were first talking about doing it, and then you really, really dove in. And I know just from following you guys that you made a ton of recipes while you were testing, and it became, you just immersed yourselves completely in the book, and it shows, because that's why the book is so good. But how many recipes do you think, or how many jars of different preserves do you think you guys ended up with? Because you were talking about all the jars that you had all over your house from everything that you made.
Yeah, it was so crazy to start with. And then when we got into bookmaking, we had jars for testing, and then I was in charge of managing the photography and the art direction and stuff like that. So I had to make sure that every time he made something, he made enough that we could potentially shoot it later. Mm. So we had so much, yeah.
Yeah, so we normally live with about 800 jars of preserve at peak season. And then we made another probably 600 to 700 for the book that we couldn't touch for about 8 months. We brought a separate wine fridge into the house for the ferments so that they could age, because you can't get rhubarb when you're going to shoot photos in March.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, we didn't. I think I didn't want to divide up the photography. I wanted to do it all in one go. So we did it in March, in February and March of, a year and a half ago. Yeah, that was, in retrospect, an interesting challenge in itself.
Well, the photography is really well done. It's one of those books that you could read like a novel, just because it's so beautiful. And the pictures are so beautiful, and the recipes are so appetizing. So even if you're not a canner or you're not a preserver, it's just a beautifully well done book. And the illustrations are so great. And Dana, did you do the illustrations?
I did, yes. Yeah. Wow. Thank you. That's another one of our sort of sideline goals, was that it could be just as comfortable on a kitchen counter, on a bookshelf, or on your coffee table. And I've been happy to hear that a lot of people are just leaving it on their coffee table to thumb through at night with a glass of wine. That makes me so happy.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate goal. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay, well then you guys also did another thing that I thought was really innovative with this book, and it's the way that you laid it out. You laid it out in a way that there are, I think one of the lines in the book is a trip to market in 25 ingredients. So you have the book laid out where you have the techniques in one section, and then you have these 25 different things that you can preserve in the other section. So people can look up in the book if they want to do jams or jellies, they want to do canning, or if they want to do salt preserving, they can look up the technique. But then they can also look up a certain fruit or a certain vegetable and be able to make everything. So whose idea was that?
I think that came out of the genesis of both of us together. But I do all of the writing and the recipes and the cooking side. Dana really makes it really functional.
Yeah, we have an interesting way of working together. Like Joel says that he would have written an encyclopedia without me, and I probably would have done a picture book without him. So we really sat down at the beginning, and that was a tough few weeks of like really hammering out how we wanted this thing to come together. And we approached it from a point of view of how we do our preserving. So when we like this time of year, we're in Toronto, and winter is over. Like it's a long, cold winter, and the farmer's market opens up, and you just get so excited to see the first bits of produce, and like asparagus is out, and we always buy too much of it. So we wanted to, you know, when you come home with too much asparagus, to be able to flip to the asparagus tractor and make a variety of different things that'll enhance your cooking all year long, rather than just an asparagus pickle, a little bit more than that. And then if you want to hone in on a certain method, like if you want to obsess over fermenting for a while, because Joel really takes the methods, like he's sort of built one method on top of another, and he sort of gets obsessive about one for a while. So if you want to approach it that way, where this weekend I'm going to learn about fermenting, you can also do that. So you can approach it from a few different angles.
I guess the dirty secret, Teresa, is that I work outside of the house in a totally non-related industry about 50 or 60 hours a week. And when we were writing when I was writing 7 days a week, people would say, how do you come up with four or five recipes at a time, especially for preserving? And this is the way that we look at it. I look at a strawberry and I would have Saturday and I'd have to make four strawberry recipes just for fun. And, you know, if you're making jam and you're taking all the time that it's going to take to make strawberry jam, why not drop some in vinegar or drop some in vodka or rum? And suddenly you've got three or four preserves in the same time it takes somebody else to make jam.
Yes. And that, in case anyone hasn't figured out, that's why you called it batch, because you're batching the recipes. And so within the book, that it was just so clever. Within the book, you have all these different recipes together, and you always have like little batch things of two different things that maybe you could make at the same time. And if any of us that go to farmers markets, we've all done that, where we've come home with a whole flat of like plums and you're like, what the heck am I going to do with all of this? You got, you know, because you tasted one, of course, they hand you one and it's like crack. You can't just come home with just one. You have to buy the whole flat. And you have like for plums, for example, I just thumbed into that, and you have sweet and sour plum sauce, plum jam, fruit leather, prunes, of course, dehydrated plums. So you have all the different things that you can make all right there, and you can layer some of those on top of each other in batches. So I just thought that was so clever.
It's a book for geeks and for newbies, I think. And I'm a geek, so I mean that term nicely.
Yes, I'm a geek too. Yes,
I mean, that's where we balance each other out really well as well. Like I'm more of a, if I have a couple hours spare time, I go into my studio and I draw. So I'm not, like, I help out in the kitchen. So when we needed to see if something was going to be, you know, easy enough for someone who's rather new to preserving, you just leave me alone with it. Because I'm I'll fall back on asking Joel. I'm like, can you just figure this out for me? And he's like, no, you do it. So it was a really good way to get someone super hyper geeky about it like him, and to be able to pull it apart. And it would be great for anyone with any level, and someone like me who might be a little bit more tentative in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's fantastic also, because that's probably why all of your recipes always are so great on the website, because you are kind of the tester of what Joel creates.
The amount of times that I jam a spoon of something in Dana's face and she's just willing to try it blank.
Sometimes I need a little explanation. I'm like, okay, what is it before I try this. It's like salty or sweet. Just give me something to go on before.
Yeah. So you're not shocked.
Yeah. Salty or sweet or full of alcohol. Because, you know, if it's 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, I need to know these things.
Well, it was hard to decide what to talk about for today's episode because the book covers canning, dehydrating, fermenting, cellaring, salting, smoking, and infusing. Infusing. I can't even say that. And I haven't even had anything to. Yeah, I haven't even had anything to drink yet. But I thought it would be really great if we could focus on some of the lemon recipes because you had some fantastic. Well, all the recipes are great, but you had some fantastic lemon recipes, and I know. For example, salt preserved lemons is something that people ask me about all the time. And so I would love it if you could give everyone some information on preserving lemons with salt.
Yeah, so there's lots of ways that you can do this. And I think if I really emphasized anything about citrus, you can do this with really with any type of citrus. Lemon is the most common, but people do it with limes too. It is really just cut up lemons any way that you want and cover them in salt. And I know that's really anticlimactic, but it really is that simple. You can add lemon juice to it. In the recipe in the book, it's what we do. We actually squeeze some of the lemon juice out of a lemon and put that in with the lemon and salt. But really, any amount of lemon with coarse salt will make a lemon pickle. You leave it on your counter for a number of weeks, a number of months. If you leave it, quote unquote, too long, it just becomes dark and it becomes less more bitter and less of that kind of deep flavor that you get from a pickled lemon. But no, they're really easy to make.
Yeah, and the fact that they turn brown, it's not that they're bad. It's just that they lose their color. So you can always put it in the refrigerator, right, to keep the color.
Absolutely, or do less of them and use them more often.
Yeah, we always have a jar of those on the go. They're just something that's always in our kitchen, and we pull them out and chop them up, or use a pinch of the salt. Like I use the pinch of the salt if I'm making scrambled eggs, which might sound weird, but it gives it a really nice zing.
I use salted lemons for all my fish and chicken recipes, but I know you guys use it in all different ways.
In the book, we really wanted to make sure that we had plated recipes like you using these as ingredients and not just as kind of jam and condiments. So there's a chicken stew recipe in the book that walks you through using lemons for that as well. One note, Teresa, I haven't shared this recipe yet. I have a different way to do preserved lemons now.
Okay, let's hear it.
And I think your listeners would love it. It is so flavor forward. It is so easy and it is so quick. It's quicker than actually preserved lemons, which could take a couple of days or a week or two to get flavor in them. If you take a sharp vegetable peeler and just peel the zest off of a lemon, you haven't cut the lemon, you've left it whole, and you just peel the zest of the lemon. I then cut it into long strings, as thin as I can, and then turn those strings sideways and turn them into really small diced cubes. A whole lemon takes maybe a minute to do this too. So you've just got little cubes of lemon zest. If you put that into a small jar, it can be a cup, and cover that in salt. And what happens is it's not the full lemon, it's just the zest and the oils that are inside the lemon zest. You get such a fresh, bright, amazing salt that you can use in fermentation, you can use it in any type of cure, or you can use it like you did with fish. And you could put it on fresh fish or use it to make gravlax with.
Fantastic. So the oils, the essential oils, really are what are in that zest. So when you chop it up, you're probably releasing them so well that they just go right into the salt.
And then you can just use the salt like you would use normal salt. So a lot of people find a whole lemon or big chunks of preserved lemon kind of intimidating and really strong flavored. I think this is a great kind of gateway entry into the stronger flavors of like a lemon pickle.
And you could probably do it with oranges too.
Absolutely. We've done oranges with sugar and then put those into like a Manhattan.
Oh, wow. That sounds really good.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a lot of fun.
Fantastic. Okay. I love that. And that's so easy. So when you put it into the salt, do you find that the salt gets kind of clumpy or it not too much? Like it doesn't turn into a big chunk?
No, I find that there's really three things that happen. If you don't put a lot of salt, what happens is it pulls liquid out of the lemons, if you're using a whole lemon, for example, mm-hmm. and you end up with more juice in the actual jar. That's not a problem. You can use that juice in cooking. That's a regular, it's just a more of a liquidy salt, if you will. Mm-hmm. If you use a lot of salt, things can dry up. And they can, if you're using, in the second example, the zest, it can dry it up much like dried chili peppers. Okay. And then there's a third, which is kind of a balance between the two. I've never found it clumpy. If it is a little bit clumpy, it's not like a hard caked salt.
So I could break it up. I could break it up with a spoon.
You could easily break it up if it did. I do use non-iodized salt for that.
Yeah, so like a kosher salt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the kosher, the better. I think that helps with the clumping as well.
Yeah, and I like using kosher salt. It's just easier to control.
Yeah.
Secret in my kitchen is that's what I think of when you say salt. I don't have fine salt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know we're training him to say it's like it's kosher salt. You have to keep adding because it's the only thing we have in here.
Right. Right. Oh, I really like that. That sounds really good. And now there was another recipe in your book, and I have seen people do this. I have not tried it myself, but the way you make limoncello is really cool.
It's my favorite.
Yes. So explain it, because I don't think when people think of limoncello, they think of really infused vodka. But
and
this
awful.
Is, yeah, it and well, you have to sweeten it. You have to sweeten it to make it because it gets so bitter. But what
it's
you do,
syrupy.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, but yes. What you do is completely different. So explain that one.
Yeah, so just to walk through the old technique and then this kind of old school technique, a lot of people just put whole lemons in vodka, infuse it like you were mentioning. And in case people aren't familiar, this is the way that a lot of people make it. But you end up getting the bitterness from the pith, from the seeds, everything in there. It becomes really, really overpowering. And while you get lemon flavor, you have to add so much sugar to offset it. And that commercial product that we're used to is really tough sometimes to drink. So an old world Italian method of limoncello, which is awesome, is you take like a cookie jar. So I tend to use a clear glass jar that I can see through. And I pour a bottle of vodka into the bottom and about a quart of vodka. You can use any amount that you want. And you take a whole lemon and you make a hammock out of cheesecloth. And you just hang that hammock. It's almost like a lemon inside a bag. And it never touches the vodka. Shouldn't touch the vodka. It should just hang over the surface. I then put the lid on and I wrap it with plastic wrap just to stop any amount of evaporation to come out. And what happens over a period of days, weeks, months is that the alcohol that is in the vapors of the alcohol connects with the lemon. The lemon never rots. It never molds. It actually never hardens. It comes out smelling quite boozy and it, you know, certainly doesn't look vibrant. But it transfers flavor into the alcohol that's in the air and then back into the liquid of the vodka or any other liquor that you make down there. I generally start tasting it after about 2 weeks. It's really bright and fresh. At that point, you don't need any sugar or sweetener. You can drink it straight up. And the longer you leave it, the more lemon flavor you get, but you might want to make it sweeter. You can also do this with oranges and bourbon. It works just as awesome.
Oh, wow. Now, oranges and bourbon, I had not heard of.
It's my bourbon cello.
That sounds so good. Okay, that's very cool. And so you just let it sit, kind of keep it out of the sun, maybe on your counter where it's in, not like in front of the window, right? You want to just keep it on a counter.
Yeah, we've got a big shelf that's out of direct sunlight, but I'm not overly protective of it, but it's I would keep it out of the sun, yes.
And you
but
really,
if it's in the sun, don't panic.
Yeah, okay. And then you just know it's done when it tastes the way you like it.
Absolutely. And it starts subtle and it only gets stronger. And even when you take the lemon out, the flavors will continue to develop.
Great. Okay. That's so easy.
It's
yeah, we
super
had a little,
easy.
We had a party recently and we did what was in the cocktail, Joel? It was like a green tea and mint and the limoncello, I think it was.
Yeah, it was a take on a vodka ice pick, which is basically an iced tea and vodka. Made with green tea and the limoncello and some mint. We're doing a lot of alternative cocktails with some friends that own some bars, and it's getting really fun.
Yeah,
I heard you talking about that. So you're helping them come up with some of their recipes?
Yeah, we're actually going to be launching a project. We haven't announced it officially yet, but we're going to be launching a project where we're going to have an official bar that we're working with, and we're going to launch preserved cocktails back and forth. And some are actually preserved, and some are based on preserving techniques.
That is so awesome.
Testing those recipes is more difficult than jam because you can eat jam all day and keep tasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably a limit on how much taste testing you can do.
We have lots
exactly.
of friends.
Yeah.
We're willing to help.
Oh, I bet they're lining up. I would be. That's so good. Well, that's really awesome. I love all of those recipes and the fact that there's so much more covered in this book. And I would love to know if you have either one of you, you could each have a different one, but if either one of you have a favorite recipe in the book. You don't have to tell how to do it, but just what's your favorite?
He just lobbed it on me.
Yeah.
I know, it's funny. I think because for us it's so seasonal. We decided to eat predominantly seasonally a number of years ago. So I just look forward to whatever the latest, like right now I'm obsessed with asparagus because I haven't had it in 8 months. So it's fresh and it's out and I start to really look forward to the pickled asparagus in the winter though. So like where we're eating it fresh now, we're putting some by so that we can enjoy it again in the winter time. So if you ask me this question in like August, I'm probably going to say peaches.
Yes.
And tomatoes are definitely my thing too. So I have one for each season pretty much.
Yeah.
So the tomato sauce to us is just so iconic. It's where it all started. And it's actually, in terms of artwork, it's one of the only preserves you'll find in the book that's actually in a conventional mason jar, because we wanted to make sure, like visually, make sure that it's stands out a little bit from the rest. And we didn't want a lot of mason jars in the book. They're in all these different vessels, and we just wanted to have a lot of fun with it. But we definitely left the tomato sauce in the classic mason jar.
Yes. So Joel, what's your favorite?
So it's tough because we have a bunch of preserving recipes, and then we've got regular cooking recipes with the preserves too. But when I wrote down the recipes, we had to come up with all 200 before we actually wrote one. So we wrote the names of all 200 recipes and the key ingredients. And I started ranking them. It took me 6 weeks to rank them from one to five, and five being the most happy. And I took 6 weeks to try to get them all up to a five out of five that I was most happy with them. And when I got to recipe 197, I found a six. And I had a real dilemma because I either knew that was going to be my favorite, or I was going to delay writing by another 6 weeks and try to get everything back to a six. And I delayed writing for 6 weeks. So I really stand behind every one of these recipes in my head. It was my attempt at a six in my world of taste.
I totally believe that. From looking at the recipes, absolutely.
And the majority of them are active in our kitchen all the time. So we wanted to make the center of the plate, the main food recipes, is something that you could make on a Wednesday night easily. And things that from out of our pantry, like this is how we really cook. So we do have a jar of preserved lemons on the counter all the time. We always have a jar of sauerkraut in the refrigerator for using on any number of different things. So it's just...
Well, it's really
all the things we love to make.
Yeah, it's very obvious that you guys, you know, you walk the walk. And that's obvious from your blog and obvious from the book, because the recipes, even the way they're written, make you can smell them in your head, you know. Though I know from everything I've ever done of any of yours, they always work. And you can't say that about every cookbook. So I'm very excited about this. Now,
you're really good on our ego.
Love you.
Well, you didn't know Dana was paying me on the side. Yeah. Well, now I would love for you to each give one piece of advice to people who are just learning how to preserve food or just wanting to dip their toes in the water. What would be your piece of advice? Dana can go first.
I think our main one, because we do get asked this a lot, is make something you really, really want to eat. So we've had a few people say like, oh, I want to make pickles. And then they learn to make pickles. So I don't like pickles. Like, well, why did you make pickles then? So if you're just like me, I love sauerkraut and I would eat it on everything. And so it's easy. And learning to make sauerkraut is so easy. And it's so fulfilling to make something. You're like, I made that. And you're so much more proud. So make something that you really, really love, whether it's a sweet or a savory or a hot sauce, a barbecue sauce or anything, or a cocktail for your friends. Mm-hmm. Like, make something that's going to make you happy, proud, and that you love the taste of.
Good answer. What about you, Joel?
I think the biggest thing that I'd like to share as a message is that I think the preserving community, and I include me in this, in some cases has really misrepresented accidentally preserving being jam and pickles. And although I like those two things, and we've got recipes for those things, you know, just know that there are so many different options and you're already preserving. If you don't think you preserve food, I imagine that you probably use a fridge. And if you're using a fridge, you're already keeping food. If you use a freezer, you're already preserving food and you already are doing tricks. in our book, we tried to share like over 30 recipes that you could do in 10 minutes or less. And I think if people knew it's not just about long, hot days over a stove, there's so many things you can do even without cooking that it's really easy and it's really fun. And if you enjoy flavor and you enjoy creating, it's a great, awesome hobby.
I think you've really hit the nail on the head for someone just starting out, that they don't need to be intimidated and they've already been doing it and they can dive in, and your book's a great way to do that. So I wanted to thank you guys for coming on. We're going to do a part two because there was so much for us to cover that this episode is just part one, and we're going to be diving into part two of this interview next week. So thank you so much for joining me on this episode, and we'll dive into part two on the next one.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So that was my interview with Joel and Dana of Well Preserved and the authors of the preserving book called Batch. Now, I'm going to have links in the show notes of everything that we discussed within the podcast. And to get all of those links, or if you would like to have the full transcript of this episode, just go to livinghomegrown.com/57. Next week's podcast with Joel and Dana is all about salt and smoke curing of food, so you won't want to miss that. There's some really good information. Thanks so much for joining me today. I know how busy you are, and I really appreciate that you take time out to listen to this podcast. So until next time, try to live just a little bit more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown Podcast.
Check the audio levels. Joel, I'm going to have you just start saying the ABCs, and I'm just going to make sure that your audio is high enough.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Okay, Dana.
I knew them.
And you did. Yay.
I'm like, do I sing it?
No. Okay, perfect. How'd that sound?
Great.
Okay.
Great.
I'm going to do a quick restart on my Skype too, just to make sure.
Okay, so I'll hang up and I'll wait like 3 minutes and then I'll call you both. Okay.
And I'm going to get a beer.
Okay.
Can you get me one too?
It's 8:30 here.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'll hang up and wait for your call.
Yeah, okay, sounds good. Okay, bye.